When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back into UAP Weekly. It's a new week. It's a new episode right here. Stephen Diener with you on the Unidentified Alien Podcast Weekly Edition. I know last week wasn't around, but it was a deserved little break after a pretty intense couple weeks here on UAP and really just with everything that had come out in the news. But now we're going to jump right back into it. No rest for the weary, and I am honored to have on Michael Herrera today. Just a quick background on his story. I know he'll get into it as well, but just so you have a little background before I bring him on. His story kind of, has gone viral over the past few weeks. He was the Marine that was in Indonesia on a humanitarian mission back in 2009. And while he was there, he came across, him and his men actually, came across what they described as, you know, basically a classic flying saucer type shape, kind of like eight sides to it. And they went down to investigate and held at gunpoint by these unidentified, you know, like mercenary type guys dressed all in black. Again, I know he'll explain it, but just to give you a little background. And they're held at gunpoint as some type of operation is going on behind them. And from there, they were let go eventually after having their lives threatened by these mercenary type guys. And there was a lot of questions from that story. You know, the technology that they saw, you know, he mentions in his story that they saw this thing flying away, you know, instantaneous acceleration type thing, like you would hear on your classic, you know, UAP, UFO type of sighting, takes off and it goes. And his allegation is that this is a man-made craft using reverse engineered technology from alien craft. And he spoke about this at the Washington, D.C. Disclosure Project conference with Dr. Stephen Greer, and, you know, covered him during previous UAP Weekly when I talked about a lot of stuff from that conference. But now we're going to have on the real deal today. The man himself, Michael Herrera, is going to come on and talk in depth about that story and everything else that kind of leads from that story, stems from that story, and a lot of other things. We're going to cover a lot of ground here today, so going to bring him on now without any further ado, because like I said, we got a lot to cover. Michael Herrera here today on UAP Weekly. Thank you so much for coming on here. I'd like to say I'm honored to have you on. I appreciate everything that you're doing, so thank you for being here today to tell your story and talk about what you know and what you want to get across to the world.
Hey, Stephen, thank you for having me on your show. Thank you for what you're doing as far as getting the right information out there. Like I've disclosed to you earlier, I've had 68 people as last week, all from major news networks. We're talking about CNN, MSNBC, all those, you know. It's not that I don't trust them, but here's the thing is that what people need to understand is there's a narrative being pushed. Mm. The narrative is obviously military-industrial complex is trying to fakeate a next event because they want to take taxpayer money and they want to fund the machine that has been funding, because now wars are dwindling down and that's what everybody's noticing. So now the next narrative is, or I should say false narrative, is going to be this quote unquote alien invasion that everybody's kind of been hearing about, but it's like, how are they going to carry it out? So a little recap on what I talked about in D.C. during the conference was my experience in Indonesia in 2009. as a Marine, you know, we do a lot of combat operations, but we do a lot of maritime security as well as humanitarian assistance. And some of the operations that we're doing out there mainly revolved around humanitarian assistance. So originally it was in the Philippines with a typhoon that had hit. So the 7th Fleet, which is what I was attached to, that's a naval fleet that's out there. We had to respond to that. And so while they had the rest of the fleet engaged in that, they ended up tasking my ship because simultaneously they had an earthquake and tsunami that had hit the western part of Sumatra in Indonesia. Padang City is kind of more the AO that we were in. And to recap, we basically came across a 300-foot in diameter. You know, they say unidentified flying object, but here's the thing. They're identified these days.
Right.
People in the government know what they are. So I hate using that term UAP because it's identified. We know what we're talking about now. Back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was kind of more of a, it would be suitable to use that term, but now they're identified.
So this was like a classic saucer shape, though, that something that, you know, you would hear about in the news. Maybe they would call it a UFO or a UAP on the news. That's classic saucer shape is what you came across.
Yeah, yeah. And this, like I said in a conference, I mean, the reason why I know it's around 300 feet, at least a football field.
Right.
Because the helicopters that we flew on are CH-53 Superstars. They're very big helicopters, mainly for transport. Some of them, you know, you can hook a line to them. You can carry howitzers. We've seen them do that. They're pretty big helicopters, almost 100 feet. So you could fit from nose to tail, three of them underneath this craft. I mean, it was massive. And it, you know, it had an octagonal shape. It has some very intricate designs to it, especially with the way that the transition between the colors. It was like a light dark, or I should say light matte gray to all the way to like a very dark matte black. And that's why it stuck out like a sore thumb. So it wasn't something that, you know, we were read into or at least expecting. And it ended up being a surprise of our lives. You know, a lot of people, you know, I want to tell people this, and you're not going to see anything like this sitting in your living room watching an idiot box telling you what to think or believe. You're not putting yourself in situations to go explore the world and see that. You're not going to find out what the world, what's inside the world and everything that at least the mysteries or anything just from sitting there watching television or drinking beer. It was something that was incidental. So we, of course, weren't expecting to see anything like this. So that's not the alarming part. The alarming part was obviously this paramilitary organization that was involved with this. You know, they were wearing military gear that was very similar to ours, a little bit more high speed. It's just a fancy lingo of saying kind of more, you know, special operations type. And it was something that, you know, you as a Marine or somebody who's in a ground pounding operation or something with infantry, something where you know the type of gear. I mean, because we've studied our enemies, we studied our allied forces and what they wear. And this was definitely ours. It wasn't something that you'd see like Canada wearing or, you know, the UK or anything right. like that. It certainly wasn't Russian. It was all American made stuff.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to make that distinction. Like you said, it's not like it was pointing to one certain country. I mean, these were guys, could you tell these were, you know, guys of American descent? Could you tell that they're from the United States?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the way they talk is like you and I, you know, perfect English. Even the lingo they were using was very similar to what we use in the Marine Corps. So I suspicion that these guys were uniformed military at one point and either got an offer, you know, to partake in operations, not specifically this. They may have not expected it, but obviously, you know, they pay them pretty good money to do this. You know, look at the kind of technology that they have behind these operations. And I've so a couple things. It's perfect cover, realistically speaking, because let's say you come out to Colorado, wherever you're at, and you're out hiking somewhere and you see this unfold. You see like a craft out in the distance and you see this military operation. It's as outrageous as it sounds. And I agree with that. I mean, it definitely does sound outrageous. But what I'm stating is the experience and this, of what I witnessed that day. You know, if you were to see this in operation and you were to alert the military, alert the law enforcement, whether it's federal, state, local, whatever it is, are they going to believe you?
No, no, for sure not. No, they're going to look at you like you're crazy, probably laugh. Yeah.
Go check yourself in the psych ward, buddy. It's pretty much what they'll tell you, you know.
Yeah.
And the one of the disappointing things is, you know, when I had my camera and I took video and pictures of this right on top of that slope, you know, it was kind of like, you know what, I got something. that I'm going to share to the public, or, you know, however, just to say, hey, look, I'm not crazy here. But the fact that five of my other Marines were standing next to me and observing, as well as, I don't want to say victim, but it's just, we were at the wrong place at the wrong time. Sure. And what we experienced was definitely the prime example of that wrong place, wrong time kind of analogy.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up a couple of those things, because you talk about the camera, right? You're trying to take some pictures. Now, at the at the end, they took all that stuff from you, right? They basically confiscated all of your evidence that you were trying to gather.
And I don't know who it was, because, like I said, you know, when we end up docking in Subic Bay and we had a couple of days of liberty there, came back the first night and I saw my camera on the rack. And it had the memory card out of it. You know, it's a pretty big size memory card, especially for a camera like that. It's kind of cheap. But, I mean, it did good quality. I mean, there's a lot of pictures I took on there that I can't get back. And it's just not even related to this issue.
Right.
But, and the fact that the camera was compromised, because I had two batteries, you know, so they took that battery out. I had another battery in my locker, and I popped it in, and it wouldn't even turn on. Mm. So I've had people that, you know, I've talked to that if I still had that camera, they may have been able to get that data off of there somehow. And, but as far as it was pretty disappointing to see that, because obviously they at some point scrubbed everybody's stuff. The Marines that were with me had all their cell phones missing at that point too. And I didn't take my cell phone with me. I left that back in Japan, in Okinawa.
Okay.
You
know, gotcha.
There's no need for me to take a cell phone, because you're not going to get service out there, you know, because I only got service stateside. So it's something, as soon as I touched back down California, or even Alaska for that matter, I could just, you know, call my folks, hey, I'm back stateside, or, you know, girlfriend at the time.
Right.
But, you know, I had to have like these phone cards that you could use, at least on base or out in Japan. It's like a SoftBank card or something. And then obviously they had ships on, you can buy like credits or like through the ship store to get like phone cards to also use on the ship.
Right.
To also call home too. But, you know, the whole time during this operation, they actually had everything blocked out for a couple of weeks. So we couldn't even call home or tell anybody what was going on at that point. And then especially with this event happening. So I wish I still had that camera. And what I had mentioned to people in the conference is obviously that footage is still out there. Somebody's got it,
right?
Whether it's locked in the archive or something like that. And if it ends up getting to a point where either these people, the operation that we end up witnessing, come forward, which I'm hoping they do. I'm hoping a lot of people do. And that's kind of more of why I started doing this. You know, after one law was passed to allow us that we're under any kind of non-disclosure agreement to come forward and speak about it. Because the reference I make all the time is like, you know, yeah, marijuana is legal for the most part, but how many people are still sitting in prison for that?
Right. Yeah.
You know, intent to distribute, sell, things like that. It's a very hefty felony. And they're still in prison for it. And whether the justice system says, you know what, it's just easier, or they're just going to play, yes, it was illegal at the time, you're still paying for your actions, I'm not going to subject myself to being in prison for the rest of my life because of talking about something like this that happened. So I had to wait for the right time and the right place to do that. And fortunately enough, after I heard about that, that's when I basically contacted Stephen Greer and told him my testimony, told him what was up. And, you know, the thing with him is it's something that he's heard multiple times from, you know, this is what he told me, and he's told the rest of the world for years, you know, because before I got into what I'm doing now, I've went back in the past and kind of tried to research what he's been talking about, see if there's any kind of correlation, and there is, which is good, because there's some stuff that I spoke about that corroborate other people's testimonies from the past, and that it's going to continue down the line too. There's going to be people in the years from now, maybe months from now, they're going to talk about the same thing I've talked about encountering.
Actually, now, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So now, you know, the interesting thing too, from when I spoke on that conference on that Saturday, at least for the disclosure project, the 2-day event, and then the press clubs, two different things. Saturday, I ended up doing my speech. And, you know, I was also acting as a security role for Dr. Greer. We also had another guy present that was helping to facilitate that as well, when I would be basically doing what I'm doing now. Dr. Greer ended up getting a message from a high level source that's still in the still within these projects. I'm not going to disclose where he works. I met this person, but we didn't talk about what I'm about to tell you. I saw the message that he had sent Dr. Greer stating that he wasn't expecting to come out and reveal this information, but he didn't want to leave me hanging. That's what he said in his message. And it was a long novel, like he wrote a Bible or something. And what he was explaining was what they were doing this operation. He told me I was wrong about one thing. So those shipping containers, the things look like shipping containers, they had a cylinder on the front. And I suspected that to be an oxygen supply or vacuum, you know, to seal up drugs, because that's how a lot of these guys try to do it, and they get with very sophisticated stuff. But if you're running this kind of technology, then this is something that's going to help suit that, because obviously if you're flying something that goes in excess of 5,000 miles an hour, probably even faster than that, you're not going to relatively need to keep those things as fresh as if you're trying to transfer them through a ship or, you know, like a vessel of some sort. You know, you can just go from one point to the other pretty quickly. But what he had told me what I was wrong about is it wasn't drugs. He says it was humans.
Wow.
Now, this guy has participated in these operations personally, and he explained why they did it, how they do it. They use natural disasters as a way to scoop people up. They pretend to be a humanitarian force, you know, like American military. And they'll build trust in the people because now they're getting help, but then also they lure them into these containers and they ship them out to, you know, he talked about underground installations. That's kind of the biggest thing. And now people are discovering, especially Dr. Greer's list that he put out of at least some of the black sites that are just in the United States. And there are some throughout the world that people have personally worked on that are on our team. And so they transfer them underground. And he says they use them for all sorts of experiments, mainly medical experimentation, among other things. And he says a majority of them die. You know, so the fact that I go from thinking it's drug smuggling, and they have weapons because I recognize the weapon cases, all the way to this point of human trafficking, that's very alarming.
It's a big jump, for sure, because when you're there and you discover this, you know, lack of a better term, this spinning UFO, right? You see this, you and your men see this, and you think, okay, what the heck is going on here? And as you go investigate, I guess that's when, you know, these, I hate to use the term mercenary, but like mercenary type guys kind of held you guys at gunpoint. But you're still noticing different things around you. You're noticing how big this craft was. You're noticing this ventilation. You're noticing that it kind of looks man-made, but it also looks alien. And I guess that's what kind of gave you the impression, well, there's some type of operation going on here, and the ventilation, I guess, is what made you think about drug smuggling. But you're told by a high-level operative, who, of course, you can't name at this point, that it's actually human trafficking, that this was a human trafficking operation, and it's not the first one, and it's not the last one.
Yep. And, you know, the last one he participated on directly was in 2004 in Chihuahua, Mexico.
Wow.
He's very, very vivid in detail with that. You know, he talked about the same kind of nature, how they scooped up the people, but they said that the only difference was this time. So it confirmed a couple things, too, that these platforms may be weaponized, because they had two F-18s that were scrambled to intercept what they were doing. Hmm. You know, because it got picked up on radar. I mean, I don't know, you know, the specifics of that. But they ended up taking one of the planes down somehow. Hmm. And I don't know what type of weapon they would use. I mean, I would assume, because the way he said it is it turned the plane off and the plane crashed. So something that's electromagnetic, something like an EMP, is what I would estimate that he was talking about. Of course, he ain't going to go into much detail about that, because then if he's traced back to what he's doing. By the way, this person's trying to come out publicly too, him and about 30 other people.
Oh.
But the problem is now that the government acknowledges this as being an issue, so what these people are doing, they want to lose their pensions. They don't want to have any kind of legal prosecution against them, because what a lot of the people don't understand is that the government does not oversee this. We're talking about the presidential oversight, congressional oversight. Nobody knows about it. So the fact that nobody knows about it means that it's constitutionally illegal. So if they're bound by rules that are essentially with these operations, then it means that those it's null and void, because nobody knows about it. So what they're worried about also, you know, imminent danger for speaking out against this too, is something they're more worried about, because obviously how deep they go. So it's completely understandable, because I felt the same way for almost 14 years. Until I was able to come and talk about this openly, just because now that the government with the Pentagon, among other people, I've got protections in place, which is great. And what I'm also encouraging other whistleblowers to come forward. If you guys have seen anything and you guys have witnessed anything firsthand, and I say firsthand because that's going to have a lot more credible evidence and you have witnesses, I had witnesses with me, of course, you know, five other Marines, and one of them was only well enough to respond to say that he wasn't going to come forward. It's not worth the risk of his life and his family, his military career, bottom line, which is fine, because what it does is it confirms what I'm talking about to be true, because we've had the government officials try to get these guys to come forward, as well as Dr. Greer, and this was the response that he had.
Yeah, exactly.
So it confirms things to a degree without directly confirming it.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And it's important that, you know, these other guys, or just, you know, any type of person who's involved with operations like this, would be able to feel comfortable enough to come out and talk about these things. I mean, just recently, you have Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio from Florida, where I am, just talking last night as we record this. And he's talking about how him and Senator Gillibrand are, you know, have talked to a lot of these whistleblowers, have talked to a lot of people who are kind of staying under wraps, but have talked to them behind the scenes. And, you know, Mark Rubio said that a lot of them, like yourself, are credible. He mentioned, you know, they were talking about David Grush a little bit. You know, he said a lot of these whistleblowers are very credible. What they're telling us about, you know, non-human intelligence and these government, or not government, but private companies are using behind the scenes, that essentially now they're saying there's this 6-month timeline, right? That now Senator Gillibrand mentioned that was 6-month timeline where any type of private company like a Lockheed, like a Raytheon, would have 6 months essentially to the end of the year, to the end of 2023, to say, okay, this is what we have. And if they don't, I guess there's some type of repercussions. So
can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
To kind of talk to you about Marco Rubio, as far as him being the Republican senator in charge of the Senate Intelligence Committee, my contact within that group relayed my information to Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio knows my story.
Okay.
So I'm confident in that, because now with the interview I had with Arrow, with all the people that actually got involved, I'm glad it actually reached the right people that needs to investigate this. And now that there's been a sequence of people coming forward that are corroborating a lot of the same information, similar to what I witnessed, they realize that there's a problem. So with this bill, this legislation that they put out recently, any of these companies that have any kind of non-human origin material, whether it's intact crafts, whether it's technology of any kind of nature, that one, they have kind of like a safe harboring thing where they're more than likely not going to get prosecuted by the legal system if they're compliant. And if they don't, then obviously the government is going to hammer these corporations and these people. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Of course, they're going to try to some companies, I'm willing to bet that they're not going to be very adamant about wanting to hand up stuff that's making them a lot of money.
Right, right.
Okay. But this is where it comes into effect of having people like myself who have worked in these companies and have witnessed these things and have access to them still. And they're all corroborating the same people. And as a matter of fact, these whistleblowers have named these specific people in charge. So that's where it becomes where they can't hide, because now they've got the names. Now that you know, you've heard the Disclosure Project, we've got over 100 attorneys right now that are trying to do a civilian RICO, a lawsuit against these companies once they're named, because we have people in these companies that name key specific people running these operations. So if they're subpoenaed to court, and this also goes for whistleblowers too, if you haven't came forward, they could potentially be subpoenaed too. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to testify under oath, just like I did, explaining, what we witnessed and why and what we think, you know, things like that. But it's more trying to get the facts out there.
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, Michael, because I think some people don't know that you did testify under oath, right? And
yes,
in a confidential type of setting, correct?
Yes, in a skiff. And here's the thing, you know, anybody knows you lie to the Senate, Congress, Pentagon, anybody who's trying to do an investigation. I mean, it's perjury ultimately.
Right.
And even at a government level, it's 5 years in prison. I have a reputation as an entrepreneur, and that's something that, you know, obviously if I'm going to weigh something that's a big issue here compared to my personal life, I'm going to give up my personal life because this is a bigger issue here. I've had people try to approach me with book deals, trying to, you know, make money from this. I'm not trying to make money. What I'm trying to urge here is the government to understand that there's something that is going on here that is not right. People are dying from it. People have been murdered for it, and it needs to be resolved. The other thing is, too, this technology is going to help humanity in a very specific way. And I don't mean in a militaristic way, because that's not how it should be utilized. It should be something that, you know, you're self-sufficient to a degree. And, you know, Dr. Greer's mentioned the last century. That's very true. We could have had the documents that I personally have seen and stuff that I've ever since I've came forward and started researching more, trying to find the to connect the dots, so to speak. It takes you down a pretty big rabbit hole, but what it boils down to is how much greed and corruption there is to keep the type live. It's not the ETs that they're worried about. It's the technologies. Because, you know, you have cars out there that have been running off the same technology since the 1800s. You have locomotives, the same thing. Aircraft, same thing. You have something that doesn't rely off of fuel, something that's self-sufficient, especially not having to pay public utilities. I mean, ultimately, it's going to end poverty very quick. Because now people are going to have access to clean water. They're going to have access to a lot of things that they normally wouldn't have because they have these devices. So this is what they don't want, because the people who run this, and you know, the estimated industry net worth is around $700 trillion for oil, gas, coal, you know, everything like that. So if this technology got out, these guys would go bankrupt. And what they don't understand is, in a deeper level, these guys own a lot of assets around the world, and they would, you know, they're very psychopathic people is the nice way of putting it. They don't want to relinquish that control. They don't want to go bankrupt. They love the power. They love the influence they've got. Some of these people buying governments, you know, we're hearing about George Soros buying off elected officials as well as district attorneys. I mean, it's all proven facts, and people thought it was conspiracy a couple years ago, but it's all coming to revelation. And this is the thing, you know, I encourage people to have a skeptical mind and to research into things, because that's how you're going to find the truth. And the truth may be something that it might be refreshing to, okay, well, I'm being lied to and I know what the truth is. But some people are going to come to the realization that it's going to change their life like it has mine. And this is something, you know, is there risk to it? Yes, there is. There's a lot of risk to it. Reputation being one, my businesses, things like that. But second of all, it's also my family's safety as well as my safety. I've had helicopters flying and hovered over my house. I've had my dad, for example, he had a helicopter hovering over his house.
Boy.
And it's not something that they have a normal flight path over where we live, you know, at least where he lives and where I live. Where I live is kind of close to the airport here. They're not allowed to have any kind of vehicles entering the airspace because there's planes flying over, you know. But yet I see a Black Hawk among other black helicopters flying around. They're hovering there, you know, and I wave at them, you know. But it's something I'm used to. Now, I've had some videos I've taken of this. I've had people at Arrow who said if I witness this again, just send them the information because I'll investigate it.
So you're saying that you actually have, I don't know, companies, entities, whatever we should call them, as far as, you know, the people behind these operations, that they're actually trying to intimidate you and intimidate your family to get to you as well.
Yes, and you know, I laugh at this case, you know, because me, I know how much money that costs. And if they're going to spend millions of dollars to try to scare me, keep wasting your money, suckers. I mean, that's just it. Keep wasting your money, because it takes a lot of resources for that. And to pay people to do that, especially the fuel, the helicopter, where they're flying it from, everything like that. So the fact that I'm keeping people up at night because of telling the truth. Now, obviously, if this was bullshit, so to speak, they're not going to spend the resources for that. They're not going to care. But now that all of a sudden I came out, ever since my meetings with the Pentagon and things like that, and some other elected officials, by the way, are having the same thing happen to them. And that's where it gets interesting, because now they understand that what they're tracking on is something that is, it is true. Because why would they spend the resources to try to silence people or try to intimidate them?
So they're going after elected officials, too. That's a pretty big deal. I don't think anybody's heard that out in the public on the news or anything like that.
They don't call that because they don't want people to realistically know that. But it's just it's a case because they personally told me, as well as other people in the government who, you know, who are very high up there, are having the same thing happen. When they get to this issue and they start getting into the juicy parts and understanding the corruption involved with it, as well as the embezzlement of federal funds and things like that, of course, they're going to try to silence people and try to scare the crap out of them any way that they can.
What do you think happens, Michael? What do you think happens? Let's just use a hypothetical. 6 months from now, you know, we're at Christmas time. We're coming into the new year for 2024. And some of these companies haven't given up the goods, so to speak, right? That the 6 month timeline from now, that's, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee has put on wanting to know about these technologies that they might or may or may not have. What happens if they don't give it up? Where are we on, say, January 15th?
There's actually two things with this. One, there might be a false flag distraction. I mean, ever since we came out with our stuff in D.C. and all these whistleblowers, because now we set the precedence. Now that we're having people come forward, you know, a couple, four or five a week, you know, who have information. Some like to remain anonymous because of the fact that they're still involved to a degree. Some of them are people like me who witnessed an incidental event and, you know, something that's imprisoned in your mind, something that, you know, has to be shared. And so there's two things that are going to happen. Either going to set a distraction like a false flag or something that's going to be all over the news and it's going to distract people. Then you also have people like me, David Grush, other whistleblowers are coming forward. And they're trying to keep that under wraps because of the other things that are going on. So something is going to happen. And my personal opinion of that, I think it should be the way that the government's doing it right now, because people aren't going to get killed for it. You have a bad situation because you have people in these projects who don't know that they're illegal. They think they're doing the right thing. How do I put it? It's like an indirect witness or something. You know, so somebody doesn't understand that the president, Congress, Senate, anybody of government, cabinet does not have any kind of oversight over this. And they think that they do. So, right. Of course, they're abiding by the rules, you know, thinking that everything's legitimate in a constitutional sense when it isn't. I hope that these companies can come to a resolution with the government and say, hey, we're supposed to be on the same side here. You guys are supposed to help the government develop research and development, things like that. It's going to help us thrive as a government, as a country even. But this is where you get greed and corruption that come forward before any kind of morals. And that's the thing that's more frustrating about this, because people want to hold on to their assets and their hundreds of millions of dollars that they're earning because of these covert programs or deep covert programs, for that matter. So, because here's the thing, why would they waste their time trying to put legislation out?
Right.
If it's not real, the subject's not real, or it's just like got the giggle factor, so to speak, right? Because a little green man, you know, my experience was had nothing to do with ETs. It had nothing to do with ETs. It had to do with a piece of technology and operations they're using to use that technology to run their programs and to do them in a covert way that's just, you know, a witness would be discredited because the fact of what it sounds outlandish. I agree with that. You know, I've had, around the social media, like I took a lot of my stuff down and deleted it because I don't want people contacting me. And, like, people are finding me on LinkedIn. I don't care. But I don't want people asking me, you know, like, you got a lot of naysayers out there. And the thing is, there's two things that I've seen floating around. Well, it doesn't make sense. Well, yes, it doesn't make sense. I agree with that. That's why I'm frustrated about this, because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense that we didn't go in there with comms. I didn't make the decision. That was somebody more higher rank on their color made the decision that we didn't need comms. We're supposed to observe the area. And when the Hilo lands, that's when we're supposed to basically get on a bird and leave, because we're sitting there supposed to provide overwatch, right? And 300 meters ain't far to trek, especially when you have a combat load and a weapon and, you know, you're in good shape as a Marine. You know, so you can make it to that Hilo within a certain amount of time. They've got security on that bird as well, because they have 50 cals on each side and they have a tail, if they have a tail gunner, but most of the time they have 50 cals on the side of those helicopters. And that's a weapon that provides, you know, superior firepower and to take any kind of threats up that need to. And they go a pretty long range. And it's something that's intimidating, because if you're in the opposition, you get hit with one of those. That's not a pretty sight.
Ooh, no.
So, but the fact is, you know, we end up seeing something. And if we had communications, you're damn right, we'd have called it in.
Right.
And what would have happened, I don't know. And the other thing is, too, I've had people, at least in the comments, Reddit, all that kind of stuff. Why didn't they kill us? Well, that's the same question I've got too. I don't know. Maybe these guys, because they were at one point military, and I'm assuming this because the way that they carried themselves is very similar to what we would do, at least the military guys in general, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, you name it. So they may have morals.
Right.
They don't want to go against us who are just innocent people who just, you know, are trying to help people out, and we stumble across this. And I'd hate to get shot and killed because I was doing my job, at least in the sense of trying to help people out.
They might have had a soft spot. Yeah.
And you know, if these guys ever come out and talk about this operation, I hope they do. And the first question I'm going to ask them is, why did you let us live? Why did you let us go? You know, and it, as much as the event sounds outrageous, well, of course, they're probably going to let that be the best of their ability to discredit, to say, yeah, you saw something that looked like a flying saucer out in Indonesia that had trucks on the platform with a paramilitary organization.
Where does that technology come from, Michael? Is this, I mean, is the accusation, or maybe even the revelation, that this technology is coming from reverse engineered alien spacecraft, right? Is that?
Yes. We had the ability to master anti-gravity control. That's what it's called, not anti-gravity. They call it gravity control. That's the technical term.
Hmm.
Since October 1954.
1954. All
right. Yes.
Okay.
And then so the Germans in World War II, I mean, we had people that, you know, Senator Warner's son, a lot of these other people, even General Patton, he knew General Patton. And they talked about this to him. He was kind of more of a witness of knowing what his dad was doing, as well as some other people who even worked in the MAGIC, which is a Majority Intelligence Committee that was around this issue. He talked to these people. And he said that the Germans had stuff that they mastered. They didn't master it completely, but obviously you have Operation Paperclip, which allowed these scientists, these brilliant minds that the Nazis occupied and took, and we put it into our government to help them, you know, help us with that technology too. And of course, it didn't go to the conventional government. It went to this deep black side of it. And that's how they were able to do it, you know, reverse engineer technology. I mean, and here's the thing, you're going to hear more people come forward who are directly involved with these projects of reverse engineered technology. You know, and the funny thing is, Bob Lazar was one of the first people that blew the lid on this, and he was sworn in secrecy. I mean, his life has been hell. This is the thing I want to establish to people. We don't get famous for this, and we don't get a movie deals, and we don't get book deals. Our lives become hell. I'm getting followed. I got. You know, I'm armed, you know, I build my own weapons, you know, things like that. I like to shoot. That's kind of my thing. And I've also got a private security company that's almost like a private military for me. You know, so these guys are trained, they're former law enforcement, former military, former special operations even. So I feel safe the fact that I've got these guys on my side if I need to. But the thing is our lives don't become glamorous over this kind of stuff. And it's like people think that that's the case, and it's not. Bob Lazar had a hell of a life when he came out with this stuff. A lot of people try to discredit, you know, and here's the thing. I'm going to have people try to discredit me. Go for it. At the end of the day, I don't care what your opinions are. I'm not trying to convince the public that this is real. I'm trying to convince the government that this is real and that multiple people along myself have made a loud of enough ruckus here, loud noises, for them to be interested and to take what we're doing seriously. That's what I care about most. I don't care if somebody's lives in their basement, who's never seen anything like this. You know, it's just how it is. You know, you're going to have naysayers in what you do. Doesn't matter what it is. I've been a naysayers about my whole life. You know, I'm used to that. But it just, it forces you to be in that pressure, and it gets you to actually understand what's worth and what isn't. You know, I always describe him to my sales department here, you know, because they hear it sometimes too, you know, from customers or people are trying to call. And it's like, if you're lying out in the pasture looking for that hunt, right? You're trying to get that prize, get that elk or whatever, or that antelope, that big kill. You're going to worry about the little flies buzzing up around you? Or you're going to focus on what really matters? And that's what we're doing. You know, Dr. Greer's had a hell of a time with the stuff that he sold. Now, here's the thing that people need to understand about Dr. Greer. Dr. Greer is only relaying information from what people have told him. And in tune, it has made him aware, and it's made him research. But most of the time, it's everybody coming who knows about something is coming to him to tell him, because he's in a safe spot. He has never been in the military. He's never been in a government capacity. He's not under any kind of any NDAs. He has no legal bound whatsoever to keep a tight lid on this. These other people, such as myself, among others, we don't have that luxury sometimes. Now we do, because of this law, but before then it wasn't the case. So he's somebody who's relaying information of what he hears from people. And he has a very strict vetting process of credibility, right? Because obviously there's going to be people who want, unfortunately, they want to be famous. And I don't understand why, but there's people out there who do, and they will go through the lengths to do it. And I feel sorry for them. But at the same point, he's got a very, very strict vetting process to allow the right type of people to come forward who actually have firsthand experience, who can prove that they were there, who have other people mainly also that can corroborate the same thing. So it's not like you just take anybody who says they saw something, because that's what Arrow's interpretation right. was. When I did the interview with Arrow.
And you have, right? You've spoken to Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick from Arrow.
Yes, I did. Yep. And, you know, it was nerve-wracking because, you know, I got these government officials here. They're listening to me and tell my thing. You know, it sounds outrageous. I agree 100% with that statement. I've heard this. I've seen it all over social media and Reddit and all that, you know. I agree. It does sound outrageous.
Did they take you seriously?
They did. I was told this, you know, I'm not going to go specifics with it because obviously I signed NDAs at the Pentagon about this. But the one thing I will tell you is one of the government officials that accompanied me there said the other 25 people that came before me, they didn't take it seriously. It's like somebody saw something in a military installation in the sky or something. Okay. When they heard my testimony, they were taking notes and writing everything down. And the main thing that they were concerned about was not the craft, because that was the lightest. I agree with them on that. It was this paramilitary organization. They wanted to know who they were. And you guess what? They want to know who they are, and I want to know who they are. And I think the public now wants to know who they are, because now you're going to hear some people that are going to corroborate what I'm talking about, but in a different fashion from either incidental witness such as myself or people who have actually worked in these programs directly. That's going to be the thing that's going to set this ablaze. One thing I want to touch on too is, you know, there was a whistleblower that Dr. Greer interviewed like a long time ago. I didn't know the specifics of it. His name is Joshua. He was a Marine too. He was down in South America. And he stumbled upon, you know, he was a surface-to-air missile operator. I don't know what the MOS on that is specifically, but he was manning the Stingers, right? Okay. So they're anti-air. They pick up a heat signature. You launch a missile and take some aircraft. Very cool thing.
Yeah.
But they end up coming across a crash retrieval, okay? And so he described the craft and the noise that it made. Well, that, yes, if they're reverse-engineered technology, they're going to have some similarities. Meaning the propulsion systems are very similar.
Right.
So, of course, they're going to have an audible hum. The way I described it was very similar to what this Joshua guy described it, which was like a unplugging a guitar amp, because that's exactly what it sounds like. It's not the same pitch, but if I was to hear that noise again, I could tell you it's one of these things. I could tell you for a fact. And it's weird because we were about 150 meters away from this craft, and you could hear it then, but over the slope or anything like that, you couldn't hear it. Even when it was going up in the air and it took off, you didn't hear anything. You just heard the hum and that was it. The other thing you talked about was paramilitary organization that had black camis, that had black gear, all that kind of stuff. Some other people I've talked to who know something about this say that the reason why they wear all black is because they do not want to be identified. It's very generic thing to wear all black. Law enforcement agencies do it for a reason too, because they don't want to be identified. Military is a little bit different because obviously you want to be identified when you're in an AO with other friendlies.
Right.
So the way they can look through and see, okay, these guys are our guys. These guys obviously are not wearing military style, you know, clothing that would be very uniform, which would signal a military force. So these guys have uniformity to a degree, but it's not in the way that it should be utilized. So that's the other thing. The other thing is he mentioned an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. Okay, that's the guy that I saw too. It might not be the same guy, because his happened in the 90s, I believe. It might happen in 2009. Mine didn't have a name tag on it. He would not identify himself. But what I was also told is that some of these guys, some of these operators, have the ability to get these uniforms and perceive themselves as military officials in order to extract information from people.
Wow.
And some of them, you know, and of course, this guy pulls rank because he's a lieutenant colonel. Pretty high up there as a military officer, and as a Marine, you're like, oh crap, you know, this is a big deal. But you know, that's a way that they can order that information out of you. Or most of the time, what I was told is that they befriend you, try to be buddy buddy with you, and see what you know. or they play dumb and try to, you know, act like they don't, excuse me, they act like they don't know anything so they can extract their information and see what you do know and try to mislead you that way. So those are my theories. I can't confirm it, but this Joshua guy said the same thing. Now, the thing I will tell you is that screams one word, corroboration. Because not the first time that this has been, I talked about it as well. There's going to be other people who are going to talk about it too. And they're going to probably say the same thing. Yeah, this other guy said there were black camis and this and that. Well, right. Yeah, that's how they operate. You know, the other thing I want to touch on, I've seen where, how could Marines surrender their weapons? First of all, when you have people who already have the drop on you, let's say you get pulled over by a police officer. And here's the other thing too. Not everybody's got the same interaction with police, right? For myself, I get pulled over, it's usually always a good interaction, right? Because, yeah, I was speeding, officer, sorry.
Right.
Some guys have violent past, violence against police officers. Do you think they're greeted as nice? Do you think they have a gun dropped on them? These cops will pull people over with guns. I've seen it happen because they're known to be violent. Okay? And if you – and I've seen a lot of body cam footage of this. If you move in a way that makes them uncomfortable, and they have a gun pointed at you, are you going to do anything to chance them shooting you? I'm not.
Right.
And guess what? When these guys, when it's because the way that they enveloped us was from, you know, from the left and from the right, was not directly in the middle. And the reason being is because they had interlocking fields of fire on us. We were in a funnel, so to speak, and they were on the sides, almost like a flank, not directly, but kind of more diagonal, which means they could have killed all of us if they, just a couple guys could have done it.
And this was your experience in the Philippines when you came down and you saw the craft there.
This was in Indonesia.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's getting, because the original operation, as far as humanitarian assistance, was in the Philippines first.
Gotcha.
And our ship, which was the USS Denver, was routed all the way to the western side of Indonesia. So a lot of people are getting confused. This was Indonesia. We just happened to do, we didn't even partake in any of the operation and Operation Katsana in the Philippines. We didn't do any of that because our ship was immediately routed to the western side after that earthquake hit. But, you know, I tell everybody, there's a lot of, you know, armchair quarterbacks, right? They're going to say, oh, well, you know, we're known for fighting. Yes, but here's the thing. If we would have done something to signal a firefight, first of all, there's eight guys that we saw. When we saw these trucks going onto this platform, there was four guys in every single truck. I'm assuming this because I only saw one of them unloading, and I didn't see specifically how they did, but I saw the doors open, and everybody got out, and there's four guys dressed the same exact way on this platform. Who's to know that there's not 30 or 40 other guys like that there?
Right.
There's six of us. Do you think we have a chance against this, especially with these guys highly trained as much as they are?
Right. It's not a John Wick movie. Yeah.
No, it's not. People need to understand it's a movie for a reason. It's entertainment. It's not real life. People think, you know, because they watch these movies or play video games, they think that they have the ability to understand how this works. There's a lot of people in the military who think that that's how it works, and they end up going to the first combat deployment and realize that it's not how it works. You know, so me, I'm thankful because guess what? I'm back here. I'm alive.
Right.
I got to see my family after that. My Marines also got to see their family too. It wasn't my call that we wouldn't engage because obviously there was somebody who was a higher rank than me that was there. And he was the one who made the call. And this guy was in Fallujah during Iraq. They had the outnumbered too, but it's a different scenario because here's the thing. In the jungle, there's no cover to hide behind, especially the opening that we were at. If we were to try to bank off, these guys already had the drop on us. They're just going to engage us. They're going to take chances. Because guess what? In a conventional sense, we would have done the same thing if it was an enemy force that we were trying to occupy. You know, so there's no there's concealment because you can hide through things. But guess what? The concealment's vegetation. It's not bulletproof. So right. There is no immediate tactical advantage that we had at all with these guys.
Right. So
we had our weapons down.
Right.
Because we're sitting there walking up to this thing. It's not like we're at the low ready even. We're sitting there like this. And these guys have already had their weapons on us, and you hear them flipping off safe.
So you did what you had to stay safe.
Well, I'm here. You know, exactly. I'm not Swiss cheese.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the thing that people need to understand. So you put yourself in a situation, because I guarantee if you were in that situation, they would have done the same thing that we did.
Yep. Let me ask you this, Michael. What is your best guess, or even maybe your knowledge of it? Where is this coming from as far as the companies or the private companies that are doing these things? Is it, you know, the Lockheed Martins, even their division of Skunk Works? Is it Raytheon? I mean, who's using this technology for these purposes when it comes to human trafficking or abductions?
I have no idea. I have no knowledge of who it could possibly be. I don't know. All I know is that they're well-funded, they're well-trained. They're above the law. They have, you know, they have endless amounts of resources to find people, because obviously they knew everything about us. They still do. They're potentially still involved because I'm having these black helicopters flying over my house, hovering over my dad's house, scaring our dogs, scaring our cats. this is the thing. It's like, you know, I was told, because I brought this up, and at least a government official, and he says, next time record it, because then the Pentagon's going to investigate this.
Well,
so they know, and because we're not the first one to ever talk about this, you know, as far as being followed and having helicopters. But I just think in a money sense, I think it's hilarious, because they're spending millions of dollars to try to scare us with a helicopter hovering right there.
Right.
And when it goes, it's just, waste your money. Keep wasting your money. Now, if it's the taxpayers' money, that's a different story.
Right.
That's where the accountability from the government's going to come to fruition, and hopefully get this in check. Because it's, you know, and I'm thankful so far that this has been the extent of it, because before then, the way they operate is in secrecy. They master the dark world, so to speak, the secret world, right? So anything that anybody brings up, they master that. But when things are brought into light, it puts me in a spotlight, because now if anything does happen, if I murder or die or anything mysterious, by the way, for a record, I don't feel like harming myself. I'm not going to kill myself, right? And I even said this to the government officials and people that I interviewed, or interviewed me, I should say, to let them know that I am in a right state of mind. Well, I don't feel like taking my life. So if anything happens in that nature, guess what? It puts a red flag up to say, well, how'd this happen?
Well, we hope that doesn't happen for sure. And I know... we hope so. And I know I don't want to take up all of your day here, Tim Michael, so I'll get you out here pretty soon. But I want to make a leap here, and maybe it's too far of a leap, but I can't help but to think, when we're talking about just going back to the human trafficking aspect, putting them, you know, what you were told, which was people being put into this craft that you saw back in 2009. Two questions, actually. Number one, how long has that been going on? And number two, are these alien abductions, are these classic alien abductions that we hear about that are being blamed on, you know, an alien race like the Greys, so to speak, but it's actually happening through these private companies?
So I'm glad you actually asked that, because this is part of that false narrative. There are people in our team who are witnesses to working on programs and underground military installations who, fun record here, just kind of relating to this. One of my employees actually has land south of here, actually recently acquired some land down south as well. And this was in the 90s where they bought it. And they had noticed that their cattle was being mutilated.
Oh.
And they getting very frustrated with it. But what they started noticing were these black helicopters. And they said they were silent, you know. So they don't think they took video of this, but all their family saw this. They see the helicopters. So their interpretation, because at that time they're thinking that they can grow marijuana, or they're trying to look for grow operations out here. But here's the thing, we're very high altitude, so it's not really ideal, you know. So it's a little harder to grow things, but especially in a larger capacity, because you can fly a helicopter over, and you know, the DEA knows what to look for. So it's not DEA, not only that, but they're marked helicopters. They have to have the numbers on their tails to signify who they are when they're calling through, going through air traffic, things like that, especially the FAA. Apparently these guys don't do that. So what some of the people on our team had told Dr. Greer, and he's relayed this information to us, is that they use these cattle mutilations to harvest the DNA of the most sensitive parts of the animal, that they use as more of like a suspension tool, so they can genetically grow this flesh, right? It's synthetic to a degree. And they make them into these what are called program life. This is what the witnesses who told us, because they worked on these programs. They said that they use these animal parts to grow the flesh to put over these, like a drone of some sort that is mechanically, they don't move very smooth. They move like a robot. And they use these to scare people. And there's two types that come to find out, because I had asked Dr. Greer this, there's two types. They have the ones that look like grays and they have ones that look like reptiloids. Hmm. Or the reptilians that people see. So there's two different types that they're making. And they've been making this since the 60s. From what one of his top guys in that project, I don't know if they're still alive or whatnot, but he has all the documentation and everything that can prove what they're talking about. He talked about the facilities of where they manufacture that, and especially in Colorado, there's one that's famous that has a bunch of conspiracy theories around it. That's Dulce, New Mexico.
Oh, sure. But,
yeah. So that's where my employee's family lives is not too far from there. So it does kind of make some sense, because the deeper you go down south, you start seeing a lot of weird stuff. There's a landowner in New Mexico that's close also to Dulce who had night scopes, cameras, night vision, everything. And he actually caught these guys doing that with these helicopters, with this military paramilitary organization going and killing his cattle, harvesting the material and flying off. They do it so quick because it's an operation they rehearse. Just like we do for operations in the military, we rehearse using terrain models, figure out who's going to do what. We do rehearsals as well. And these guys obviously train the same way, because it's something that's just very sped up, very fast, very precise, just kind of like how they do with what we saw in 2009. So like I said, the false flag is a thing. And the new thing that they're trying to do, and this is why you see it so much in the news, is the alien threat. There's no alien threat. And if there is, we shouldn't be shooting their stuff down like we have been since the 40s. You know, you hit somebody that you don't want to hit, and they have the ability to do basically what God can do, because they're so advanced, hundreds, you know, thousands to millions of years advanced compared to us. Why the hell would you want to do that? It's just foolish. And we have the technology to, at least the illegal secret government's got the technology to do that. But at the same time, you know, they're not the ones directly paying for it. It's us as a species. It's us as a planet that's having to pay for that. So now, conveniently, too, I want to bring up the whole crash landing that happened in Vegas. That's all over the news.
Right, the recent one, that's right.
That happened a month prior to our event. Then all of a sudden, everybody found out what we were doing, and they started rushing these events, just like David Grush did.
Interesting.
You
know, yeah, the timing of that.
The caveat on David Grush, what he's saying is legit. It's secondhand on his experience, though. He's only hearing it because he was a high up intelligence officer for the Pentagon, and he's hearing it from people that he was in charge of that had access to these programs. So it's not like he saw these directly. He's just compiled information of people that were working under him to come to the conclusion that they had ET craft, whether it was intact or not intact, in their possession. And he talked about the facilities, where they're at, the projects that are associated with them, the key people, everything. So what he's talking about is the truth. I don't agree with what he's doing personally, trying to say that ETs have killed people and things like that, because that's the narrative. Now you're going to see, if he gets his History Channel special, whatever it is, you're going to know what side of the point he's on with that. Anything with profit is a red flag with this. And that's what people are trying to do. And people who do this for profit, they're paid off to a degree, because they're being fed misinformation or trying to go along with that narrative. Us, we're not doing that. What we want is this to be out in the public eye. We want the government to oversee these projects, these corporations, or whoever is doing it, and to put a lid on some of the things that don't need to exist, such as the corruption, such as the paramilitary organization running guns, drugs, and humans. That's more of our concern at this point. That's a bigger fish. I've had people try to approach me for book deals, things like that. I've all told them to go take a hike, just like interviews from mainstream media. I would refuse to do that, because I've seen what they did with COVID. I was security for the America's frontline doctors who blew the whistle directly to the President of the United States, President Trump at the time, talking about how it was not as severe as what the media and these people who were bought or had stock into the the vaccines, right? First of all, the military was the one who made the vaccines. It wasn't Pfizer, it wasn't Moderna, it was anything like that. All they did was basically pay them to put their labels onto their stuff and utilize it in that sense. And that came out recently, by the way. That's even something that RFK talked about.
Right.
Now he's making headlines. And what he is stating is stuff that, again, other people have told him, but they proved it to him. So the America's frontline doctors were being, you know, their medical licenses were being revoked because they were going against the narrative. Their lives are being ruined. They weren't being taken as serious because all their conspiracy theorists to say this. Well, all of a sudden, fast forward two, 3 years later, everything that they talked about is true. And there is people getting screwed up from this. Yet you, and this is the thing too, always follow the money. Everybody who made a COVID diagnosis on a person, they were paid in excess of $16,000 to $30,000 to tell somebody they got COVID. That doesn't seem like a red flag, because that seems like a red flag to me.
And there's, I guess you come across some of that even too with, you know, this technology that we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, they kind of.
That's exactly right. And so it's a similar animal, but it's in a different type of industry. And that's the thing is, when you start seeing the similarities of how things are conducted, you start to piece them together and start seeing the corruption of time. And that's what I encourage people to do. Be skeptical on what you're being told. And I'm glad people are skeptical with mine, because here's the thing. My story has not changed. It's not going to change, because my simple nature to do with this is I'm telling what happened. That's it. That day that I came across this incident, all I'm doing is telling people what happened. That's it.
Yeah.
That's simple. Whether they believe me or not, that's up to them. But I encourage people to look into this, because you're going to start seeing other people come forward who have similar experiences and maybe have knowledge more on a deeper level than I do. You know, I was infantry at that point. So, you know, needless to say, there's not a lot about the subject. Now, to tell you the other aspect of that is I was completely, I didn't believe in that stuff. I didn't think alien, you know, extraterrestrials and reverse engineered craft or anything like that exist.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you if you had any predisposed ideas.
I did.
You know,
I was the stubborn person said that never existed. Oh, yeah, you're crazy. You're crazy. I had people try to, you know, say, talk about this and say, oh, no, that's insane. That doesn't exist. Are you kidding me? When I saw it that day, it confirmed two things. It confirmed that, one, we have that technology, and two, obviously we got it from something to reverse engineer.
Right.
So it completely changed my life into a degree where now I now, because of that event, was like a catalyst to create more of an open mind for me. Because here's the thing, people who think that they know everything, they don't. And you're foolish to think you know everything in this world, because here's the thing. We're still discovering animals in this on this planet that we've never seen, even the deep oceans. You know what I mean? So it's we don't know anything. We only know a percentage. And it's the same thing. You're taught in life to go to school, go to college, get in debt, and get a house, get married, retire, and that's it. They don't teach you how to make money for yourself like I had to learn the hard way. They don't teach you how to have the mindset to do that. They don't teach you what hard work ethic is. They want people to be indoctrinated in this. This is what this current world is doing. And unfortunately, the narrative is trying to indoctrinate people to have fear on this subject, which there shouldn't be any fear about this. There should be people understanding that there is a foul work being done here to keep a tight lid on the technology, not so the ETs, but just the technology in general.
So
when people start to realize that.
Like the classic grays that we see, right? And people talk about these abduction scenarios, and maybe they go through some type of regression therapy. We've heard a lot of those stories over the years, over the decades. And they all have the same description, right? You know, the elongated face, the big eyes, the slits for nose. Are these actual grays that they're coming across then? Or are these actual, these are just these robotic droids that are being manufactured?
Here's the thing. Anything could happen. Somebody could have legitimately came in contact with grays. Somebody could have. I don't know. But I'm willing to bet, just because of what 90% of people are seeing these days is man-made technology. And it fits in line with what that is described, because there is also another person on our team. He never came out publicly, and I think he's deceased. He was actually kind of a smaller guy. He worked in special operations, and they used him aboard these ARVs, and they dressed them up. And this is in the 60s, so they didn't have that kind of, you know, crazy technology they got now. But they would use him to basically abduct key people, and they would think he was an alien. And scared.
Really?
Yep.
So these tactics have been going on, like you said, since the 60s. As far as the scare tactics, the technology, the trafficking,
yes.
This stuff has been going on for 60 years.
Well, from what I was told and briefed, that this has been more of almost 100 years of complete with this technology. But as far as the nefarious activities, I don't know. I could estimate, but having people have came forward before I did who have talked about that, and other people have came forward to corroborate each other's stories unknowingly, would suggest that it's around the 60s that they started doing this. Because at that point, you had the Cold War, you know, Vietnam was right around the corner, but you had the Cold War at that point. So obviously, there's a lot of stuff, even the space race.
Yeah.
You know, people trying to get to the moon faster, things like that. You know, so there's a lot of things, there's a lot of variables that play into that. So obviously, space was kind of the thing that everybody was obsessed with. So of course, if they start doing operations in space, they're definitely going to come across things. And maybe, you know, my speculation is that they use this to kind of silence people who are getting too close to it, just like they're doing now. And right. They're still trying to, and they will try to until this gets handled. And I'm really hoping that the government does this. And I'm glad that I'm seeing the measures take, because we kind of had the thing, the interpretation that, you know, maybe they'll turn a blind eye to it. Maybe they don't want to because of how outrageous it sounds. But the fact is, there's too many of us making noise. Too many of us are making noise. And now whistleblowers are coming out of the woodworks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. So anybody viewing this, if you have any information and you are involved firsthand and you can prove it, whether you have witness testimony from other people that corroborate what you're talking about, that were there, kind of like how I had my Marines do the same thing, at least one of them was willing to text back that they weren't willing to come forward, but they knew exactly what we were talking about. If they, anybody does that, what I can do is I can give my email to put in the thing. That way they can contact me, and I can get the ball rolling for them, because I still keep in contact with these key people in the government, and they're looking for more people to kind of help facilitate what they're trying to do.
Sure. Would you like to give your email here, or I can tweet it out later?
The best email that I will put my business email, but you can definitely have it in the description, mm-hmm. is Mike.Valkyrie, Inc. And that's I spell like EYE. And it's INC. So ValkyrieIInc@gmail.com.
Okay. And so anybody who's in the position like yourself, who's still kind of like, man, I don't know if I should do this. You know, I don't know. I'm feeling unsure about my safety, my family's safety, my career. They can at least reach out to you, and you can help them out, get through the proper channels to say what's on their chest and what they're seeing.
Because I mean, this needs to be dealt with. And I know there's people out there just like myself. You know, we've concealed it for years. I've concealed it for 14 years. You know, of not being able to speak about it until the right time. Now, I will say this. There is a right way to do this, and it's the way that we took. You saw the guy that went on Discord who released information about NATO being involved in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
He got documents he leaked. First of all, that is classified material. So even the fact that it may be illegal, it's still classified to a degree, and that's where they got you. And that's why you saw FBI HRT raid his house, and they should take him into custody. And he's probably going to be sent in prison for the rest of his life.
Hmm.
Unless there's people in the government, even if the next president comes in and pardons him, or however that goes, there is a right way to do it. And it's the way that I did it, among others, is the way that it needs to be done. And it's the safest manner, because you'll be in the system at that point. And then you also have the protections as a whistleblower that help keep you safe. And it's so far, like I said, the only thing I've had that's kind of crazy is just these black helicopters trying to intimidate me and my dad, you know. But it's just, we kind of expected that, some retaliation to a degree. So right. It's not perfect, but if you're willing to come out and put yourself in the spotlight of more of being public to put a bubble around you, this is the best way you can do it without having any kind of repercussions. If you were to sign a non-disclosure agreement, or if you're still amongst these programs or whatever it is, reach out to me. I can get you in touch with the right people that you need to get in touch with. So that way you can contribute to the bigger cause here. And that's helping out humanity at the end of the day, helping out each other. It's what we're here to do as a species.
Yeah. It's a great way to say it, Michael. And I know you got to get going, so I'll get you out of here on this. And thank you again for your time. We've had a lengthy discussion here. I really appreciate that. No, absolutely. But I got to ask you this, because it's been on my mind. When we talk about these, you know, these companies, these private entities, what is their end game? Is their end game to just continue the status quo, to keep the power, to keep the money, to keep the technology, keep doing the experiments that they're doing on people? Or is there something else at work here in the end?
Well, you have money, which creates power, and it also creates corruption. And I think these guys have had the grip on that concept for a number of years. And I think that they're not going to want to get away from that, because these people are being paid very well with what they're doing. They're embezzling federal funds with these projects. They'll say that a B-2 stealth bomber costs $2 billion to make. Costs around $100 million, by the way. I have a good friend that actually built a few of those when he was contracted with Northrop Grumman. And he was actually one of the key people to develop that plane. He called it his baby. Guy's a pretty smart guy. Ended up working with him for about a year. But he described it as a whole, and cost, you know, the cost of it, said he was around, you know, $2 billion, but come to find out it's $100 million. So they take, these companies take the rest of that money, either pay themselves or they make things they're not supposed to make. And that's how they get, at least get the federal funds out of that. There's other things at play, but it's something I cannot confirm because I'm not witness to that. It's only hearsay at that point. But it's just being skeptical at that point. It's speculation. But I don't see these guys wanting to try to hand over the reins to this stuff, because it's a revenue generator. You know, why wouldn't you? I mean, if you're doing that kind of thing, why are you going to be so nice to hand everything over? Now, the buy-in that's going to be great is the fact that the government's going to help these people out. They're not going to take their assets. They're not going to take their pensions. They're not going to punish them legally within the 6 months of them coming out. So post 6 months from now, we'll see what happens. It's something that I'm anxious to see what's going to happen with that. And I'm hoping it's not going to go to the degree of having people mobilized to go do something about it, because that's not what we want. We want the peaceful end game.
Sure.
Ideally.
Do you think they would stage a fake invasion? And I just got to put that out there. I mean, I know some people wonder about that.
They've been planning that since the 50s. There's documents from Science Applications International Corporation talking about this, called stagecraft. They talk about the PLFs and people dressed up as ETs using these alien reproductions, in their own words, alien reproduction vehicles, to stage abductions on people and to simulate a false flag or a false indication of warning. False INW is their specific term they used. And this has been something, even the documentation that is public, which people can look into, and I encourage you to do it. I'm not going to tell you where to look. I want people to actually use what they're born with up here and research, and you're going to find the truth. The first thing I'm going to tell you is go vault.fbi.gov and look up some of the stuff that the FBI declassified. There's proof right there. But the problem is people want somebody in a suit and tie to come onto 6 o'clock television at night and tell them what's going on. We live in an age of being so comfortable and so lazy. And that's ultimately the reason why nothing's being done about this, because, oh, somebody else has to do it. Well, it's not going to get done with that mentality. So you got people like me who are fed up with it. We're fed up with the corruption. We're fed up with stuff, because it's not just this aspect. This is kind of like a staging area for corruption, because this leaks to other facets. Because it's not even just a political corruption either, which there is. But it all ties into one thing with corruption, from greed, from power, and from money. So I encourage people to do your research. You're going to be better off that way. You know, ever since I started doing this, all I do is research. All I do is try to learn more and try to see, and, you know, try to, if I can help somebody out, if there's people who have witnessed similar things to what I witnessed that day and they have knowledge of, I'll help them out. I'll try to get them the right resources they need. I've always encouraged people to come out, talk about it. It's the only way we're going to make a difference. It's like back in the civil rights movement, right? You know, it didn't happen overnight,
right?
But enough people made enough noise to actually get stuff done.
Right.
And that's what we're hoping for.
It sure is. Michael, thank you so much for your time. And honestly, I wanted to say this to you actually at the conference in DC, but everybody was going every which way. It was craziness there. But I wanted to say, thank you to you and to everybody who was on the panel that day. I'm hoping to get to speak with some of them as well, for doing what you're doing, for being selfless in this, really, to put yourself out there knowing that, you know, you're going to go through some uncomfortable things, and even your family will go through some uncomfortable things. Yeah. But you're trying to do the right thing. And so on behalf of everybody, really, who cares about this and should care about this, want to say thank you for doing what you're doing, because like you said, hopefully things continue to progress, you know, more attention comes on it, and maybe we get to a good place with all this in the near future.
Well, you know, and that's my intention with this, is try to get, you know, try to help people at the end of the day. That's what I'm more concerned about. And I can put my personal life aside for a bit and try to help with this. One thing I want to tell your viewers too, besides doing a lot of research, looking in for yourself, I'm going to be on Sean Ryan's show Thursday coming up. So whenever he decides to put that out after we do that episode, because it's not just me, it's going to be Eric Heckard, who's the one that worked in the South Pole Station, and DC Long, who was a Army guy that was stationed at Fort Bragg, who came across his event there at an underground installation. So all three of us are going to talk to Sean Ryan, and just like yourself, he's about getting the truth and, you know, at least getting people to talk about, and whether or not they make up their own mind about what is going on is totally up to them.
Right.
You know, exactly. Open-minded is the best way to approach this. Because like I said, I don't know everything in the world. There's nobody on this planet that knows everything in the world. And there's always new things that are happening. There's always things that are going to be swept under the rug that are going to come out to revelation someday. And that's what's going on right now. So the more people that we have helping understand this, and people who actually have information, like I said, get a hold of my email, put it in a link. That way they can reach out and I can them and kind of mentor them to do the right thing.
Absolutely. No, Michael Herrera, thank you so much. And hopefully I can catch up with you again soon. We can do this again, follow up as things continue to progress. I'd like to do that if you're game.
Let's do it in 6 months. We're going to see what happens in 6 months so that we can come back and hash that out too and see what really came about it. You know what I mean? It'll be interesting.
Absolutely. I think it sounds like a good plan. Michael Herrera, thank you very much joining me here on UAP Weekly, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Got it, buddy. Thank you. Yes. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, there you have it right there. Michael Herrera in his first interview since DC Disclosure Project back on June 12th. And I am honored to say that it was right here with me on UAP Weekly. I mean, you heard him mention in the beginning how he's turned down, you know, close to 70 interview requests in the past week, a lot from mainstream media, you know, all the, you know, CNN, MSNBC, all the big names and everything. And he's turned those down. Because he knows about the agendas that they try to push, and I appreciate very much his willingness to come on here today and his sentiment that, you know, I'm trying to do the right things here on UAP, and I appreciate that, and that he chose to come on here and talk about all this. So thank you again to Michael Herrera for doing that, and it was incredible. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to take in there. This is the longest episode I've ever done of UAP in general, UAP or UAP Weekly, doesn't matter. I don't think I've ever gone over an hour before, but obviously that was highly worth it today to hear directly from Michael and to hear his story and his take on everything and, you know, what he's, the information he's come across and the information he's been told and the information that he knows. So it was incredible just to hear his story, his perspective on all of these things, and really thank him for that. And you can still look forward, of course, to the original UAP, that episode 71, working on that one. So hope to have that out soon for you as well. And of course, more UAP Weekly in the future. Would love to talk more to guys from that conference, hopefully future discussions, possibly Dr. Stephen Greer. So we'll see what else comes up here on UAP Weekly, of course, covering all the latest when it comes to UAP news and everything happening. Because there's a lot that's going on these days in the UAP world. Of course, you can continue to check out the podcast wherever you download your podcasts, download, subscribe, Spotify, Apple, all that good stuff. On Twitter, you can find me with the show at UAPodcast850. That's at UAPodcast850. And I'm going to have a lot of the links from what Michael was talking about on there as far as, you know, some snippets. I'm going to try to do some video things with this as well, so keep an eye out for that. And of course, just keeping up with all the latest information on the show. But I'm out of breath at this point, so I will go now and just say thank you again for listening to this show, to every episode that you listen to, especially this incredible episode here today. Look forward to doing much more soon on UAP and UAP Weekly. It's Stephen Diener right here. Thank you again. I'll talk to you soon.